Jeremy, thank you. Let's start with the topic of weed. There's a worldview that marijuana use in moderation is not that harmful. A few times a week or just Saturday night to get high and have some fun. What's the big deal, Dad? How bad is weed? Does it cause depression? Does it make kids stronger or weaker? What should I be telling my kids?
Great question. It's an appropriate question given what I'm saying right now. The active ingredient in weed is 10%, 15, 20, 25, 30, 50% THC levels in the basic flower or even in gummies. And what we grew up on, weed was about 4 to 5% THC. It would be equivalent to us growing up on beer versus our kids today drinking the equivalent amount in bourbon. And then someone says, oh, weed isn't so bad. Okay, this stuff is powerful. It makes them dumb, slow, lethargic. And teenager brains are still developing. It is seriously potent stuff. And I am seeing it in my practice. Great example for you. I'm going to call him Josh. Josh is 23 years old. Parents got divorced, tried going to college, didn't work out, didn't have the internal muscle to stick through it. He just didn't have that fortitude. He smoked weed a lot. Josh struggled. And the first thing I said is less is better. Zero is best. I've really convinced him. He's smoking less than he ever has. He's like, God, I'm sleeping better. I feel better. I'm not as anxious. And he came in for anxiety because he was completely underachieving in every facet. I'm telling the parents out there, weed is the problem.
You mentioned that a lot of kids are living at home and that adolescence is creeping into adulthood. Is this a mixed blessing?
What is the main reason they're living at home? They're trying to save up for money. I think the big five, which is housing, automobiles, technology, education, and healthcare has been getting very expensive in the past 40 years. So if you want to live on your own, it's really hard if you have a job that pays you $30,000. The downside is, are they living at home because they're underachieving? Are they just like, I'm not comfortable working harder and kind of grinding it out? Kids today are having sex later. They're getting their driver's license later. And Larry, the truth is, when we grew up, if you wanted to have fun, it was not in the house. There was nothing in the house that was fun. These kids are basically saying it's uncomfortable to be an adult.
Why are young adults making this decision to live at home and stay away from the fun? Do they prefer to hang out with mom and dad, or are they just happen to be in the same house?
They're in the same house online. We didn't have online. If we wanted to have fun, we were outside the house. That's where we were socializing. It's also work. I couldn't wait. I came home from college. I found a place and never came back because there was nothing back home that I found pleasurable. I just want you to understand it's the reverse.
Jim Miller spoke 2 weeks ago on What Happens Next about the history of HBO and specifically about The Sopranos, which at its core is a story about a gangster's relationship with his therapist. Tony was scared that his peers would discover that he was getting help. Have social norms changed about having a therapist?
The answer is yes. All levels of whether it's seeing a psychiatrist, seeing a psychologist, seeing a life coach, seeing an executive coach, seeing a sports psychologist.
Good or bad?
It's complicated. Am I glad the stigma's come down? Yes. The way we're parenting our kids, we are working our butt off to do the best for them, but inadvertently, we don't know how to separate giving them opportunities, helping them, and then letting them be independent. Okay, so quick story. I grew up in Evanston. I was 11. I was at seventh grade, and me and my buddies took the red line to Wrigley Field to pay $9 for bleacher seats. How many people in this audience will let their 11-year-old take a train to go to Cubs? Okay, well, it's not as safe today. That's not true. It's plenty safe. How are we basically developing some resiliency and being able to strengthen this young generation to continue to build some internal muscle to fight through some of that anxiety?
In the first few weeks of COVID, Jonathan Haidt spoke on my podcast, and he said that COVID was a mixed blessing for us. The downside, obviously, is people die and kids can't go to school. But life slows down. We get a chance to rethink our goals and objectives. Now, some people got depressed and lonely, but others said, I've really had a chance to reevaluate my life, and I'm more in control, I'm happier and relaxed. There's a good and bad in all things in life. How should we think about this as a mixed blessing?
The positive side of it is I see gratitude, appreciating your relationships that you do have, the support that you need, and then being isolated, and there was this kind of hunkering down, nesting for those families that could do it, And then such a ridiculous appreciation to be able to reconnect with friends. There is absolutely this reshift and like, man, I'm not taking anything for granted. I'm taking much less for granted.
Technology. I see the pros and cons. Zoom allows work from home and flexible work hours, but Zoom means you're working all the time. Technology makes this podcast happen. These tech apps are so inexpensive and they're so good and easy to use. And at the same time, I totally sympathize with your observation that technology is crushing our kids. I'm a secular Jew, and I can't imagine turning off my phone on Friday night and turning it back on after sunset on Saturday. The thought, by the way, of pulling that off, it seems incomprehensible, yet I see my religious friends pull it off every weekend. I can't even believe it, they can do it.
But your brain is a little bit different. Technology is really, for you, a little more kick-ass tool. How many people can now take a crap without their phone? It's not possible. So there are times in the day, like I actually put my phone in a different room and I'm just walking around. And the first like 5 minutes, it's a little uncomfortable and then it's liberating. And you're like, wow, this actually is fine. I don't want to stop technology, okay? I'm just talking about limiting. We have to find a way to get our eyes off it. And look, one of the antidotes is put it away and spend more time in nature. Nature is basically a natural Xanax. So if we're talking about anxiety and depression, if you want to bring down anxiety, we have to spend time offline, and we're uncomfortable doing that.
You mentioned that the 60 to 70-year-old cohorts is happier, less depressed, more grounded, grittier than our 18 to 29-year-olds. Why? Why aren't they coming to your therapist's office depressed and lonely like the rest of them?
They are coming in as well, but for different reasons. A marriage may have ended, or they lose someone. The older generation built their tolerance for discomfort, their understanding of what it takes to be successful, the sheer muscles, psychological, physical will to push through the difficulties of life, they are more time tested. Their ability to tolerate downtime, silence. Ask a kid today to sit in a room and do nothing. You would think it's torture. You can't make them uncomfortable because then they're going to be unhappy, because the new comfort is when you ask parents today, what do you want for your kids? Okay, I know it's a cliche. They say, I just want them to be happy.
Yeah, that's all I want.
Right. And we know we want our kids to be happy, but we also want them to be resilient and successful and things like that. What you really are saying is we don't want them uncomfortable. We don't want them suffering. I don't recommend trauma, but I recommend that there's a way they find some grit, which is developing resilience and a type of callousing. They have to skin their knee. They got to be able to get up on their own. They got to weather difficult challenges.
Let's talk about meds. We're so quick to medicate everything and anything. And I remember the first time that we met at a bar mitzvah 8 years ago, Jeremy, you told me that we had made enormous strides in the use of medication. And now you're saying that we over-medicate. What are we supposed to do?
Oh, man. Really great question. Larry, man, this is loaded. I mean, that's your show, so I'm not going to punt. I think the idea of comfort crisis and medication is in conflict because we don't want our kids to suffer. And when they are suffering, they are not in a good place. There's no way a parent is going to deny that person the tools to help them feel better and be better. I think the part that's challenging is the other aspects of their lives that it takes them to get better. The work ethic, the discipline, eating better, exercising. I mean, if you don't do that, then we over-medicate. I would never tell a parent, don't give your kid medication when they are suffering. But as a whole, if you give kids 16 hours straight of gaming, and then they say, okay, now you need to study. And they're like, I can't focus. I need some ADD meds. That's not ADD. That's training them to not focus. And then we're going to give them meds. So that's where I think the challenge is. If you can limit the technology, let me see if they need meds. Take away technology 50%. They may not need the Adderall. So great question. Very loaded answer.
Gaming. I have a son. He loves it. I noticed that he's gotten older, he plays less and less. How bad is it really if it's just a temporary thing? Now, if you're 26 living at home and gaming all day long, fine, I get your point.
How do you know which kid in advance is going too far. You got to limit it in the beginning and then see where they morph into.
You mentioned in your opening remarks that we have activities for kids that are highly tailored for maximum interest. Guilty as charged. I tried to follow my child's interest to the max. Sometimes I thought I did some good. Sometimes I thought I went too far. High school guidance counselors encourage specialization for college admission process to help distinguish kids. Is that social norm of encouraging specialization a mistake?
No. I think the question is, when is there the downtime? I think if a kid can play the violin, if the kid is just the badass in soccer, if the kid can have that skill and they're good at it, do it. But then we don't stop there, man. We keep going. So when is the downtime? But then the downtime becomes just sitting on their phones versus being a participant in the home. Like, when's the last time a kid mowed the lawn? Imagine that.
Kids have frequent ups and downs. There's a time where we need outside help because there's trouble at school, with their friends or family. There might be other problems like too much weed, gaming. Mistakes are made. And they hit lows, and then who knows why, they rebound and things are okay. And we all go on to the next life adventure.
Love it. Absolutely. That's the normal process of life. That example, the way you just kind of narrated that, but what happens when they say that shouldn't happen? They shouldn't feel down. They're too anxious. And there's a lot of great kids who are just freaking struggling. And then they need some support.
Sometimes you hear stuff like, oh, they didn't get to go to prom. They didn't get a graduation. They didn't have a proper freshman year at college. It's really been so hard. I try to say to my kid, there was a generation that went to war and watched their buddies get killed. Okay, you didn't have a prom. I get it. It's horrible. Get over it. What should we be telling these kids that miss life milestones?
I would say it one notch differently than you did. Acknowledge it. Say, it's a bummer. Let's move on. So you just acknowledge it, validate it, but don't give it like, oh my God, on a scale of 0 to 10, that was a 9.7 of hell.
New norms. I used to get up in the morning, go to work. Now I don't. And once those norms have been established, it's very challenging to reestablish historical norms. Now, some people can move back and forth between these worlds seamlessly, or maybe even grow from it. But others struggle and won't be able to adjust.
Push through the discomfort. You'll find your groove. Sometimes you may not get comfortable for a while. That's part of the comfort crisis, that you believe you have a right to be more comfortable. What's being asked of you now is to get up and go to work. That's the inconvenience. It is uncomfortable, but it's doable. You adjust. Your nature will adjust to it. And then you'll find positives through that.
I end each episode on a note of optimism. Jeremy, what are you optimistic about?
I believe in people. People get better. There's an internal gyroscope. People can feel better, but it's not feel better because they're more comfortable. They're more empowered. And they're doing it with COVID. I'm so over it. Even though I'm still struggling with it, I'm like, we'll get through it. What do you need? Let's figure it out. And people do. People feel supported. They kick ass. And that's what keeps me alive.
Jeremy, thank you.
You got it, brother. You're the best, man.
Thanks to Ari and Jeremy for joining us today. That ends today's session. I want to make a plug for next week's show. Casey Mulligan will join us. Casey was Trump's chief economic advisor, and he's now a professor of labor economics at the University of Chicago. This will be Casey's fourth time joining us on the program. He will discuss his new paper on the impact that the COVID stimulus checks have had on the number of alcohol and opiate deaths. This paper is extremely provocative. Our second speaker will be Kyle Kondik, who is the managing editor of Sabato's Crystal Ball at the University of Virginia's University Center of Politics. He will be discussing his new book, The Long Red Thread, How Democratic Dominance Gave Way to Republican Advantage in the U.S. House Elections. Our discussion will focus on gerrymandering and the likelihood of a Republican takeover of the House. If you're interested in listening to a replay of today's What Happens Next program or any of our previous episodes, or if you wish to read a transcript, you can find them on our website, whathappensnextin60minutes.com. Replays are also available on Apple Podcasts, Podbean, and Spotify. Thanks to our audience for your continued engagement with these important issues. Goodbye.